leg. Solid. Right on.
And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. What day is it?
It's Friday. We made it.
Yeah, man. They seem to be coming faster and faster, man. I can't believe it's already Friday. I also further can't believe we're in the middle of August. And it's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, my friend, my co-host. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I got back from a short week with visiting sisters. We had a family reunion. I was lucky enough to be born into a great family with we had good parents who provided us with educations, and we all still like each other after a lot of decades. So.
Well, I can tell you that's not always the case.
Well, I know. family can get under your skin, but we had a good time.
Yeah. You know, the longer we're here, the more we realize the value of that, right?
Yeah. You know, there's blood is thicker than water.
Yeah. It should be.
Yeah.
But not always. Anyway, Sandy, I want to begin with, where was it? I want to begin with the mortgage rates that are higher than they've been in over almost 20 years, Sandy.
Right. I mean, they're going to exceed 8%. They are now above a 60 or 70 year norm. You know, we're getting to the point where we're beginning to move in the direction of actually what you would call higher interest rates over a broad period of time. And it will make housing more expensive. I mean, there's this thing called the rule of 72s, and if you you divide the interest rate into 72, and that tells you how many years it takes to double your cost, right? So if you have 8% interest, 9 years, and you're going to end up with paying double the amount you paid for your house by paying off your mortgage with the interest on it, if you aren't paying down the principal. So, I mean, you know, interest can begin to really dig into and increase the cost of housing, and it can therefore reduce the amount you're willing to pay for a house on which you're going to apply a mortgage. So there's no question it'll begin to have a dampening effect on the price of houses.
So that doesn't just impact and affect the price of housing. We're still constantly looking around over our shoulder and saying we're not out of the woods yet with the issue with inflation and with interest rates and those kinds.
Well, you know, we've got I think Gary from Sussex called in and talked about how it was that the increase in interest was good because he has money in the bank and it's going to start paying interest. Well, 10-year treasuries are set to go above, you know, they're at a 20-year high, I think. And so we're, you know, the interest that's being paid to people who are willing to lend, like people who will lend money to the federal government and buy their treasuries, that interest rate is going up quite a bit. The people who are debtors who are having to pay off the debt are going to pay back quite a bit more money. One of those big creditors is the federal government. So, you know, these interest rates going up, if they stay up for a while, will seriously increase the cost of serving the national debt, okay? And so that the annual cost of paying the principal and interest of the national debt could become a very significant part of our budget.
So even though these interest rates have gone up in home loans, there are people still buying houses.
Well, you know, people were buying houses. You know, there was a time in your and my life where interest rates for mortgages were in the teens.
Right.
And they were still buying houses, but they weren't buying them. They weren't paying as much for them. I mean, you know, if you look at the difference in your monthly payments caused by that interest rate, if you decide you're willing to pay $1,000 a month and you need to find a mortgage that's $1,000 a month, then you're going to pay less for a house and come into that $1,000 price.
Right.
That begins to impact the cost of housing. So if you can pay a lower price for a house, you can afford a higher cost mortgage. And that's the trade-off, and that's what's going to cause housing prices to dampen it as a result of these high mortgage rates.
But, okay, so, but that doesn't, it's not set aside from all the other things that may impact and affect the economy, right? I mean, housing itself, you know, automobile loans.
Well, the problem with this high interest is that it does affect the real estate market in particular. It also affects the ability to purchase things on installment loans because they get more expensive.
Right.
So you're buying a car, or if you have to borrow money to buy a washing machine or something like that, they all become more expensive, and therefore the demand for those things is dampened, goes down. So, you know, it also has an impact on the commercial real estate market. Interest rates going up cause people who are owning commercial real estate to have more trouble paying off their loans. And there is generally economists fear that the commercial real estate market, which is suffering right now because of vacancies in office space, the vacancies being, you know, the pandemic caused offices and commercial office people who were leasing commercial office space to realize they didn't need as much office space. People are working virtually. We now have lots of people working 3 days a week in the office, 2 days virtually. Offices are beginning to set up something they call motel kind of office space. So instead of having your own office, you have an office space that when you're in the office, you use it. But when you're not
somebody
in the office, Tom, Dick, or Mary uses that same office space. So that means that a business doesn't need as many square feet of office space. As a result, the demand for commercial office space has gone down. And in lots of cities, commercial office space is beginning to be, they're having higher vacancy rates, and commercial the loans are beginning to come due for a bunch of buildings that were built in the last 10 years. And so there's a overhang here. Economists are worried that there's going to be a bunch of defaults on loans associated with commercial office space.
So, Sandy, I was watching the news the other day, local news, and where the old Bradley Center used to sit, that still space is still open.
Yeah.
And they were going to put two live music facilities there.
Yeah.
They've now realized that because of the interest rates and all those things, we're only going to put one. And they said because now the interest rates being what they are and all these other things, we're going to pare it down to one. We're still going to build it, but we're not unmindful of the interest now that we're going to be in the middle of that. They're going to build it anyway, knowing it's going to cost them a lot more.
Well, building one and not two, that's the same thing as the shrinking demand for office space or shrinking demand for houses. You just can't afford to do what you used to be able to afford to do. And it's one of the things that our economy got spoiled in over these last 20 years with this 1% and 2% interest meant that people could borrow money very, very painlessly. And so it expanded the capacity of people to spend money if they could borrow money easily against a future revenue stream. So in particularly from business decision making, it was much easier to invest money and borrow to build the capital thing that you were investing in, whether it be a building or a new machine that was going to operate in your factory, because it wasn't going to cost you much interest in the payback. Now that interest has gone up, it costs more to pay back, and so you aren't willing to spend as much today.
So in the end, all of this slows down the economy, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so with all of it slowing down the economy, the fact that the hiring is still at a high pitch.
Yeah.
Will that impact at all?
Well,
the outcome?
The hiring in the economy, much of it has been in the service business, okay? Service businesses are not businesses that invest in capital.
Okay.
So they aren't borrowing money to build things. It's not like a paper machine in a paper mill where you borrow a lot of money and build a $25 million paper machine.
Right.
What people are doing is the HVAC companies are having to hire people to be HVAC technicians to go out and service heating, ventilating, air conditioning, or restaurants are hiring people to work in the restaurants.
Right.
But it's not capital investment based. So most of the employment that's going up now is in sectors of the economy that are not dependent on borrowing, but they are dependent on economic activity. And as economic activity slows down, the demand for restaurants slows down. Some industries like HVAC, people who are servicing existing things, if you're a plumber, if you need plumbing services, you need a plumber
right now. Right now. Yeah.
And you're gonna pay a plumber what a plumber costs right now. And so there are businesses like that that are relatively immune from the business cycle.
So I asked all those questions, Sandy, because at the end of it, things are starting to slow down. I've been asking you for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to lead to
a recession?
Yeah.
I think we're still in the zone of soft landing. Today, Walmart was reporting earnings. Their earnings have gone up some. It's the Target's earnings have gone up. It looks like people are shopping more for bargains. They're going to places where they're more likely to pay a little less for things. That's an indication of slowdown.
But they're doing that on credit.
But, well, yes, the credit the credit card debt last week went over $1 trillion, which was the first time. So there is more credit. So, you know, we're getting into a little more fragile situation, but so far the indices that would indicate a recession are not at recession. We continue to have relatively strong hiring and job creation, which is the underpinning of the economy, right? As long as people are salaried, making money, earning money in our economy, the economy is going to be doing all right.
Listen, we've got to go to a break, and I want to carry it over just for a couple minutes into the next segment because we want to talk about China and its role and the impact that the slowing of their economy is going to have on ours.
Yeah.
On the other side. 844-967-2789 is Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
I-40 WAUK The Shaw. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me, Lindsay Kinert, at info@civicmedia.us. That's info@civicmedia.us.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 76. Winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight, lows around 57. Ample sunshine expected tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 84. Mainly sunny skies and calm Sunday with daytime highs approaching 90. 80 Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, I want to deal a little bit more with the economy because, as I was saying to you a moment ago, I remember working in industry all those years. When recession came, it meant layoffs, and it meant you know, you didn't know how long you were going to be laid off. The great thing about those times back then was when you got laid off, you knew it was temporary.
Well, you also
because
had,
your job did you didn't lose your job,
and you had unions that were supporting you during the layoff period.
Yes, but you knew it was temporary, and the job wasn't somewhere else overseas.
Yeah,
you knew you were coming back to the job, but today, maybe sometimes recessions can mean companies leaving, right?
Well, the problem is that the whole relationship between worker and employer has changed, so that layoffs used to be kind of organized, particularly the things that were related to the business cycle and to manufacturing, and in the automotive sector in particular.
Right.
And so, you know, people would get laid off, and part of that related to the whole way that business was ongoing at that time. People had big inventory. People who sold things had big inventories of stuff. So car dealers would have lots of cars on the lot, knowing that they were going to sell 90 cars a month or some number
right.
that they kind of expect. And when things slowed down, they'd go down to 20 cars a month. And suddenly they didn't need cars at all. You know, they just needed to sell off their inventory. And so they weren't ordering any cars from the manufacturer.
Right.
So that was happening with all kinds of durable goods where the inventory would be there, and it aggravated the business cycle, because when you needed things to fill your inventory, you were buying them at a rapid clip. When you had too much inventory, you stopped buying them altogether to sell off your inventory. You know, in the last 30 years, we got to something called just-in-time inventory
right.
management, where people have the people who sell things have as small an inventory as possible, which has reduced the amplitude, the height and depth of the business cycle, because this inventory cycle is not as big a factor. So that's changed. And then the relationship between worker and employer has changed. Fewer people can count on having a job when they get back. Layoffs in today's world tend to be more permanent. The layoffs, and we don't have as big a manufacturing sector. So if you're a non-manufacturer and you find out that you've had too many employees to carry what the new future for your business looks like, you begin to lay them off, and you don't talk about bringing them back. You just talk about shrinking your labor force.
So now let's add China
mm-hmm.
to that equation, because China, things are slowing down.
Well, and China is a manufacturing country, so they probably experience more of a potential business cycle along the lines of what I have described, except that they're the manufacturer for the world. So they're dependent on the rest of the world for the demand, and the rest of the world is dependent on China as well for being number one a growth market. So China has, for many U.S.-based businesses, there's been very little growth in their annual sales in the American marketplace, because the American marketplace is very mature, and they've already saturated the demand for what it is they sell in America. So many, many American companies have experienced almost all the growth they have in their profits and total revenues by sales abroad. And a lot of those sales abroad have been in China. So there's lots of, and furthermore, our financial community has gotten very entangled in financing things in China. So just today it was announced that this very large real estate entity in China was declaring a Chapter 15 reorganization. They have like $15 billion of debt held by American creditors. So that's viewed as a potential significant problem for the American financial market. But we are very entangled with China. And so when China, you know, used to be when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. Well, now it looks like when China sneezes, America's worried about catching a cold. And our financial market is behaving that way. So what worries me about our sword rattling with China is we are very entangled with China economically. We can't disentangle from China without experiencing severe economic impacts. And yet, part of the reason we seem to be rattling our sword vis-a-vis China is the fact that they threaten to become economically important and dominant, and our neocon theories don't like that.
So, Sandy, it's safe to say that for Americans to be celebrating the fact that China is starting to deal with this downturn, it really is makes no sense, because eventually that's we're going to suffer from that.
Yeah, it's like it would be like cheering that your neighbor that you don't like has some invasive plant growing in their backyard.
It's going to eventually,
yeah, it's eventually going to jump the fence and grow in your backyard. And that's the problem. You know, we've tended to look at the world like it's an NFL game, and when the Bears when the Bears lose an important offensive tackle, we're happy because it means we'll have an easier time with the Bears. That isn't the way the world economy works, and we can't cheer about the economy of China. The Chinese economy is terrifically important to the world, and it's terrifically important to our economy.
I think not enough Americans, Sandy, understand the global economy. We still see ourselves...
Song that we love to sing every time.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. Sandy, next Wednesday is the big presidential debate, candidate debate. In Milwaukee.
Yeah.
All eyes are going to be on Milwaukee. What are there, eight, nine candidates? Republican candidates?
Well, however many there are that are going to be in it, there's potentially one more or one less with Donald Trump sitting on the... I guess he only has to say within 24 hours whether he's going to show up, so we won't know until Tuesday.
Well, you know, I saw... I was watching the news the other day, and there was nine candidates, and they were at the Iowa State Fair, and they asked the people to identify the candidates. They showed them the pictures, and they couldn't identify.
Couldn't do it.
No, they couldn't do two or three. It clearly, Sandy, is it's going to be entertaining. You know, I want to see just what happens if, you know, Donald Trump is not there. And I think out of all those people who are going to be on that stage, the strongest one without question is going to be Chris Christie.
Well, certainly I think the strongest in a debate process.
Yeah.
You know, I think Christie is, you know, I said a couple of months ago, I have to say he's a breath of fresh air. I think lots of people are going to find it that way. And he is climbing in the polls. He came in second in the New Hampshire poll and supplanted DeSantis and seems to be sort of a rise. His numbers are rising rather quickly with exposure. And, you know, we should remember that we're very early in this process. The only person on the Republican side that has real name recognition right now is Donald Trump. DeSantis had name recognition without any personality recognition.
Right.
So he had yet to introduce himself to the American public. That introduction doesn't seem to have gone terribly well, vis-a-vis at least the comparison with Donald Trump and the people that are being courted. But, you know, I think that there's still time for a process to sift out in which the candidates, in which there are multiple candidates. Everyone says Trump's got it locked up. He might well. But, you know, I think that there are others who, and I think, quite frankly, that Chris Christie is one that might have some legs.
You know, you got Mike Pence, the former vice president. And the only thing about Mike Pence, well, I shouldn't say the only thing, but the one thing about him is it's kind of vanilla, right? I mean,
well, I think, you know, vice presidents, it's the same with Kamala Harris. Vice presidents tend to sink into the woodwork and to be diminished in terms of the view of what they have to offer because they didn't seem to do much when they were number two in the country.
Biden was a vice president, but he had done some things before that, I guess.
He had run for president independent. He's like been around politics almost as long as Harold Stassen.
Who was that?
Remember Harold Stassen?
No, who was that?
Well, he ran for president about eight or nine times, and he had been governor of Minnesota, and then he ran for president a bunch of times. he was kind of notorious for having a really bad fitting toupee, and he never really got very far in the presidency. But I think vice presidents typically, I mean, Nixon had to do some things in between being vice president and getting elected president to earn his spurs. But I think that there is potential for an actual race.
Let's do this. This is a time to bring CJ on. CJ, good morning. How you doing? Yep. Question or comment?
Well, thank you, Sandy and Earl, for taking my call. I listened to Sandy, and you changed subjects a little bit, but Sandy pretends to be surprised that, our economy is struggling. Well, you know, Bidenomics is a disaster. We were at 1.4% inflation, 6.8% GDP growth underneath Trumponomics. Bidenomics, interest rates. Have you tried to buy a home yet, Sandy, lately? 7.165% 30-year mortgage. Shut down housing. Shut it down. Bidenomics, inflation, still at 3%. You know why? Because of his spending. That's the fact.
So inflation at 3%, CJ. Before 2008? Do you know what the average inflation rate in the United States was from 1950 to 2008?
Probably 5%.
I'm talking about now.
Well, no, I think it matters. I think history matters, but go ahead. You're providing. Incidentally, CJ, I just want you to know that Earl and I, before the call came in, we predicted exactly what you were going to talk about, and even could have provided the very same data points you provided. And I'm not surprised. I didn't express surprise about the economy. You would like to impute to me emotions, I guess, but go ahead.
Well, you only tell part of the story. You won't talk about now. You won't talk about right now. You deflect about sometime before 2008.
No, I talk about...
Let's talk about...
CJ, stop. Okay? This is not a personality contest. I don't know why every time you call in you want to make this CJ versus Sandy and some kind of personality contest. We started this show and have been talking about right now, okay? You're the one who decided to talk about day before yesterday and the Trump period. We've been talking about right now. We've been talking about interest rates going up. Earl and I have discussed the fact that they're up at 8%. We've talked about how it's going to have a negative impact on the housing market. So you know what? You should just take all this sort of propaganda version of phone-ins and just focus on what we talk about. This is not a political show. This is not a show designed to create a platform for a political contest. You talked about yesterday. We've been talking about today.
That's all I've ever said, CJ. Talk about the subject we're talking about, man. That's all I've ever asked. As all talk show hosts ask, right? Just stick with the subject.
I'm talking about how we got where we are, and Bidenomics sucks.
No, okay.
And the mere fact that you won't even admit the reason why we got to 7% interest rates and the slowing of our economy, and now layoffs are coming, you don't listen to your own advisors on your side of the aisle.
Well, I think layoffs are coming as a prediction that we'll see, okay? Because so far, you know, we've had a growth in jobs, number one. Number two, the reason we're at 7% has to do with inflation, and you and I and the show have talked about the confluence of reasons why we experienced the inflation we did, and some of that related to the Infrastructure Act, which incidentally was passed bipartisanly. That was the biggest part of the expenditure plan that is Bidenomics, and it was passed bipartisan. I happen to view it as a pork barrel that was a commonplace political kind of an outcome. We haven't passed all of the things I think we should be focused on to solve the real problems we have in America for Tom, Dick, and Mary. But the fact is that what is called Bidenomics, the primary ingredient of that, that is the expansive expenditure plan, was the Infrastructure Act, okay? And that was passed on a bipartisan basis. We also had the Inflation Reduction Act, which was a more partisan passed bill. But the combination of the two did create a prolonged period of deficit expenditures, which incidentally, those deficits were at highs during the Trump period because of the tax reduction. And what you are refused to acknowledge is that deficits relate to reductions in taxes that have been enacted, as well as expenditures by the government. So let's just call spades spades here. You have to look at all the facts, CJ, and we have to look at the revenue side as well as the expenditure side. And Trumponomics kind of destroyed the revenue side of the government with the Tax Reduction Act that was not necessary at the time of an already heated up economy. Donald Trump inherited a hot economy from Barack Obama, and he poured some gasoline on the fire with the Trump tax reduction. And I don't think it was actually Trump's plan to do that. I think that was a Republican tax deduction, which Trump kind of conveniently rode the horse of. So I don't necessarily blame Donald Trump for the tax reduction, but that's the fact. Okay.
And CJ, I will tell you, in no uncertain terms, that Sandy predicted and projected when Donald Trump gave the tax break at the time that he did, what the outcome would be. You can go back and listen to the archives of this show, and you will hear Sandy say at the time that Donald Trump gave that tax cut, the impact that it would have on the economy. That's truth. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning, Tom.
First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. We do need to get money out of politics so we can restore government back to we the people. Bidenomics is working incredibly well. I don't know what the hell Republicans and CJ are even talking about because of the fact that we are actually cleared up a lot of our deficit because of Joe Biden. I think it was $2.7 trillion. It's the tax cuts to the billionaire class. We never had billionaires back in Eisenhower's time. We had a 90% tax on anyone that made over $3 million with FDR starting that. And even through Eisenhower, we had the same thing. And then Ronald Reagan took the tax rate from 90% down, not 90% of all people, 90% of people that made over $3 million were your taxes. And we had it. We had not a income disparity. We actually had equalness. And you know what? And the rich were still rich. They just weren't morbidly rich. They weren't hoarders with all their money, which they can do nothing with anyway in a lifetime. It's absolutely ridiculous that... I would like for you guys to ask Republicans one question. In the past 50 years, what policy have the Republicans passed that has helped Tom, Dick, and Mary, or the average American person out there? Just come up with one policy. I bet you can't do it.
All right, Tom, thank you very much for the call.
Well, yeah, and my hope is that it's something like this debate coming up. They would ask people to focus on. They would maybe even talk about the budget that is faced by median family Tom, Dick, and Mary, and what it is that, as a government, they propose to do to make the life of the majority of Americans better than it is today. And yet we can all know that won't be the subject of discussion at the debate. It might not be the subject of discussion even at the Democratic debate, but it ought to be. That's what we ought to be asking our politicians to talk about.
You know, Sandy, the continued frustration that you get in you know, it's impossible for a guy like CJ to do some research and before he starts shooting off his mouth. But he can't and he won't because it's so simple to just spot out what he spouts out.
Well, I be honest with you, I don't want to do tit for. I don't want to personalize CJ. I think CJ undoubtedly believes in what he calls in about, and I think he probably does do research. The question is, what are the sources? I mean, is it an echo chamber kind of a sourcing? And I think it might be. But that's what that's unfortunately what the world is doing now, is doing echo chamber research.
That's the point I wanted to make, Sandy, is he's not alone.
Right.
And it's easy to do that. And we can't move forward. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
It's a beautiful morning. I think I'll go out.
All right, welcome back to Darrell Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. So, Sandy, U.S. intelligence says Ukraine will fail to meet offensive's key goals. And for those who may not remember, During the winter months, there was this constant conversation about the offensive that was going to be coming from both Russia and Ukraine. And it was a big deal played up that Ukraine was waiting for this great offensive. It was put on hiatus for a while because they were waiting for weapons from the West. That they, you know, said we can't make this move until we get the weapons that we need, tanks and other things. And they were slow to get those things. But even once they got those things, they can't take back the land that Russia has already grabbed. And now America's intelligence is saying that this offensive is going to fail. What does that say long term?
Well, I mean, two things. One, it's not a surprise because during those 4 and 5 months, the satellite photos showed Russia building tank traps, building deep trenches, putting landmines all across an 800-mile frontier that lies between Ukraine and Russia, the entire area, and in particularly entrenching around and making it very difficult for even tanks to invade. So they created the kind of front that existed at the Verdun and various places in World War I, with, you know, where you can't physically have without air superiority that can bomb and destroy an entrenched position.
Right.
It's a stalemate, and so the fact that it's stalemate is not very surprising. The fact that because it's an active stalemate place, there are tens of thousands of casualties occurring on both sides also is not surprising, and it's horrifying. But, you know, Ukraine now, they've obviously having trouble with recruitment and are worried about it. They had to just fire all of the heads of the regional recruitment process for corruption in the last 2 weeks. And that pointed out in that discussion of that, the fact that the draft age in Ukraine is something like 18, but the top age is 60. Okay, so it's a broad dragnet. They're basically looking for every able-bodied man, regardless of age, to fight in the war. And there's a finite number of Ukrainian men that can fight in this war.
Right.
And as long as it's a war of attrition, in the long run, particularly a war of attrition where Russia has been able to create an entrenched position. The outcome is sort of the same outcome as was expected on day one of this war, and that was that Russia could prevail. They aren't going to prevail the way it was originally predicted, which was that they would simply overrun and get to Kiev and topple the government and end up in a very rapid process to topple the Zelensky government and install a more pro-Russian-leaning Ukrainian government. That's not the way it's going to play out. But it's pretty clear that the notion that a battlefield process can recover the Donbass and the Crimea for Ukraine is altogether unlikely, number one. Number two, the duration of this war looks like it, you know, if it's just left to its own devices to be solved on the battlefield, will be very many years, and it'll be a battle, a slow battle of attrition, very expensive, and it's going to test the extent to which Ukraine really is a matter of strategic importance to the United States, or whether it was a matter more of sort of neocon ideological importance, which was my concern at the front, and it continues to be my concern now, and I'm confident that support for it in Congress will erode as the price tag goes up. And I think it will particularly erode if and when they ever get around to doing an audit of what has happened to the north of $105 billion that has gone to Ukraine, because like we've all known since the year 1991, Ukraine, like Russia, Ukraine is a very corrupt government and a very corrupt place to try and do business or to try and do government.
You know, Sandy, when you make all those statements and you know that we keep pouring in these munitions, there's a cost associated with those munitions that we're pouring in. And the reason that we don't appear to be concerned about it is because we know every budget year, it just means more dollars are going to go into.
Well, we talk about munitions. I would feel a bit better if the dollars that are all being spent were being spent on hard goods that we knew how it was being used. But the fact is that less than half of the dollars attributed to aid to Ukraine have been in the form of hard goods and munitions, and the other half has been various forms of dollars. It's never been explained to me by Congress or the White House how those dollars are spent. I suspect they're spent paying the paychecks of the military, paying the paycheck of the military, and otherwise getting used as dollars.
Well, they've got to keep an economy going, right?
Yeah.
But
this is an economy that involves lots of grease.
Right. Well, the other part of it is the grain that would bring in resources.
Yeah.
They can't do, they're catching hell with that.
Yeah.
So more and more dollars that you are talking about are used to keep their economy afloat.
Presumably. I mean, like I said, it's never been well explained exactly how these dollars get used. I suspect people in Congress have it explained to them, but they have not bothered to explain it to the American public. My point simply is that I do believe that the American support for this is subject to exhaustion, to the extent that we have not understood clearly ourselves whether and why Ukraine represents a strategic interest to us, other than the fact that of the ideological argument that it was a freestanding country that has now been invaded by its neighbor, which begs the question of just what were all the circumstances surrounding that invasion beginning in 2014 after the Maidan revolution.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. Friday, that means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams, 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. You know,
robins and flowers, sunshine caresses each new waking hour.